All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Paul David, CEO of Literal Humans. I'm joined today by Yassin Rostom, the founder and CEO of Incredible. And today we're going to talk about regaining control of what you borrow. Thanks for joining the podcast, Yassin.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
And sorry for our folks who are listening. Maya's out sick today. She's not feeling well, but she was just in the room helping us solve all the tech problems that we're having at the start, because tech truly can't save us when it comes to recording the podcast. Yassin, let's jump in. So just by way of introduction, we're here to talk about your great work at Incredible, which is a repayments platform that helps people track, pay, and reduce the costs of borrowing. And just a bit more about you. You worked as a product manager at Tomato Pay and Lean Technologies, and you were the co-founder and chief product officer at Marvin Technologies. And by way of background, you've seen, you've got a rich background in sort of leveraging machine learning to improve how small business owners manage their finances.
Yeah, so I guess I spent a lot of my time in my career in the last decade working with open banking, and specifically like, how can you leverage, you know, this new technology to help people. And for the most part, it's actually been around helping SMEs. So a lot of my work at Tomato Pay was essentially like, how can you infer the health of an SME just by looking at their bank account? And then how do you then help them manage their cash flow such that, you know, they're not running out of money? And as most of us know, cash flow is the biggest.
Cash flow is king.
Yeah, exactly. But equally, so many companies that are otherwise healthy run out of money for various things, like your customers have paid you late. Essentially, you owe money elsewhere, but not understanding what that cash flow cycle looks like can become very detrimental to your business. So it was really just focused on how can we really quickly and really easily understand the underlying balance sheet of a business, by having access to very little information, and then how do you then deploy that to, you know, whoever you have a relationship with, your relationship manager at the bank, for example. You know, if they have the right information at the right time, or they're able to help you by giving you, you know, better loan terms or giving you a working capital loan or whatever it might be, but generally creating a better outcome for you if they have the right information.
Just to set the scene for folks in the UK, you know, we've got about 1 in 6 people who have a balance that hasn't been paid in full at the end of each month. And some of the work that you're doing is to try and help people be more financially empowered. And the guiding principle, you know, that you have, and I think it's one we can all agree on, is a debt-free life facilitates a stress-free life. I love that. How did you land on that guiding principle?
Yeah, I guess like when you think about debt as a whole, or you know, even what we borrow, it generally underpins every major life event that we have. Your first car, your education, your first home, when you get married, when you have kids. Generally, we're always borrowing for one reason or another. But then equally, it's like, especially in the UK, not so much in the US, it's this great taboo when actually it's so normal. Whether whether you're getting an education or whether you're needing your first car, like you need to borrow money at some point. And generally, like the terms are so confusing, it just stresses people out. Like what we don't understand is quite scary to most people. So when you start thinking of things in terms of interest rates and banks and letters being sent and payment reminders and all these things that happen, it sort of creates, it's quite a stressful experience, right? For the time poor, resource poor person. So the way we see it is like, if you have a clear view and you have all of the information you need, that generally leads to a much stress-free life.
Yeah, grounding it in. Look, you want to be stress-free, and debt is a huge driver of stress. So we want to address that deeper emotional issue. Like, love that from a branding perspective. So well done there. I have to give you your chops for that. This one point that you made, you need to borrow money at some point. That's an interesting one, right? Like, so unpack that a little bit for me. Like, for what? Like, you know, why does everyone ostensibly, you know, need to borrow some money at some point? Why can't they maybe just like live frugally, or maybe they don't want to like run their own business? Like, what's your thought behind that point?
Yeah, I guess like if you think what we're geared to, like instant gratification, like even issues with mental health, like generally, and then things like cost of living, you have the backdrop of an economic climate that's not been very favorable to most people. Like generally things are getting more expensive. You know, wages haven't really increased with inflation and the cost of things. And naturally, like, I think it's lazy to just say people are borrowing money and sort of spending it, therefore they have a credit problem or whatever it is. Actually, we're seeing even the richest 20% of the population for the first time in history are using, you know, short-term borrowing to get by. People are using buy now, pay later for groceries, for deliveries, like all these different, you know, things that are sort of, you just need them to live. So I don't think it's from again, like a lot of the sort of theme around when people talk about those who borrow, it's like, oh yeah, you have a spending problem, but it's not as simple as that. Going back to like, we need to borrow. If you think about how we get our education, it's usually, for most people, it's usually taking out, you know, a student loan. If you, when you buy your first home, you need to get a first time mortgage. When you get your phone contract, you're essentially borrowing money. Like all these things that you sort of need to be an adult, so to speak, there is an underlying financial transaction. And then like you, if you look at like the consumer as a balance sheet, for example, very rarely, you know, do people have excess in savings and investments. But when you look at household debt, it completely eclipses that, what we save and invest, again, for the majority of people. And then what's interesting is like all the innovation that we've seen, usually in fintech specifically, it's all geared towards like, how do we get people to save more? How do we get people to invest more? But if you start from like scratch, it's how can we help people manage, you know, what they're borrowing? Because once you've taken this, once you've had made this transaction and you borrow this money, your experience with that product is literally just a monthly direct debit or a PDF that lives in your email inbox or your drawer. And that's basically it. There's no like understanding of how much does this cost me? How long will it take me to pay? In the grand scheme of everything else going on in my financial life, you know, how should I be managing or thinking about this? When should I be thinking about refinancing? Like there's so many decisions you should be making, but it's so hard to understand because of, you know, the information asymmetry that exists between you and a lender when you're going out to borrow this money. They naturally will know more about the product than you do. But equally, for them, they just see it as like a job to be done to be able to get that thing in the end, whether it's a home or an education, a car, or, you know, whatever, a holiday, whatever it might be.
For sure. I'm glad you mentioned the product. I'd love to kind of dig into it. And you know, one of the promises you made with Incredible is, you know, to kind of, quote, put your credit cards on autopilot, which might sound like scary to some people, but, you know, I think a lot of people would appreciate it. Like having that, again, back to the stress-free life thing, like, and hopefully autopilot flying well and safely and, you know, to land to a destination. So, you know, and you do that by consolidating credit card payments from a single app. So I'd love it if you could just tell us, you know, kind of a little bit more about this debt repayment landscape, you know, what it's like, how Incredible as a product is kind of entering into it, and from a more big picture point of view, what inspired you to start Incredible?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess just before we start into how the product works, if we look at what happens today, when you borrow money, you're essentially asked to like set up a direct debit. You know, that was created in the 1950s or 60s, if I'm not mistaken. And that's basically it. And this is a very singular experience of, they're just going to take money every month, regardless of what might be happening in your finances. Or if you had a more expensive month than usual, or if you've had an emergency or whatever it might be, they're still collecting this direct debit. I think on average, a person in the UK has around 4 different credit products, right? All 4 of those different products have different interest rates, different payment dates, different terms. You know, if it's a credit card, they've got multiple interest rates on that card. It becomes quite a minefield to manage, like, how do I optimize these repayments, right? No one wakes up in the morning and thinks, you know what, today I'm going to optimize my repayments. They generally want to go and live their lives. So what underpins everything we're doing is like, okay, if I can collect all of the information that I need, I can create a singular experience that you have that is in line with your income cycle. So there's not this big gap between when you get paid and when you need to pay things out. And then I can automate the stress away is how we see it, right? Like, don't worry about 4 or 5 different payments, thinking about the due dates, putting it in your note reminders or calendar or whatever it might be. It's just, you make a single payment to us and we will handle all of the stress and the intricate details that comes with how do you optimize what you're repaying. So a good example is if you have multiple cards with different interest rates, if you're trying to save money on what that interest could be, you would need to calculate, like, based on the different interest rates, how much should I be paying to like card 1, 2, and 3. But equally, your goal might be to actually reduce the number of accounts you have. Therefore, you should start prioritizing it in a way that, you know, pays down the smallest balance first or whatever it might be. Individually, taking those actions means you have to like really be on top of it. You need to get like do the math essentially and then figure out like, okay, I'm going to go do this on this day and that day. Again, like as a time poor, resource poor nation, like no one really has the time to do that. Nor the mental capacity. And in not doing it, it's costing you a lot of money. So a good example of this is like, if you take out a credit card and you're paying the minimum, it will take you up to like 25 years to pay that. And you're paying over 100% in interest fees alone. So like, it's a pretty dire problem when you think about it, and you can see why it is the way it is. So we really wanted to solve that.
And are you facing any like sort of pushback or resistance within that landscape? Are like credit card companies like loving Incredible and excited for you to engage users and hopefully help them bring down their fees and premiums and stuff like that? Yeah, how's that looking?
There's obviously an element, and you know, we've had a few conversations with credit card companies. There is like, on one hand, absolutely, like if you equip the customer with more information and you sort of level that playing field, they're not going to go and make the mistakes that a lot of these systems are built upon, which is quite lucrative for a customer not to know how the interest rates are incurred daily or however that they might build that into the product. But equally, there is another way of thinking that some credit card companies do have, which is, if I can avoid, you know, this customer sort of going further down the spiral, actually that makes them a much healthier customer for us, which means there's less risk of them going into delinquency or defaulting on that payment, and therefore they don't need to go and do their processes internally and essentially sell that debt off. So there's sort of two schools of thinking, and usually you can tell which kind of company prefers which school of thought.
Yeah, interesting. Turning to the product a little bit now, so you've got these system alerts that users, when their credit card usage is high, Incredible will let them know, and you also offer some personalized tips to help folks improve their credit scores. And I've seen that like in my like Chase app and things like that, you know, like, hey, this is your credit score. So I think they're, you know, like credit card companies are sort of getting wind that they need to be supportive in folks' credit journeys. Tell us a bit more about the technology behind these alerts and the personalized tips, and kind of what undergirds Incredible as a product.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing we're really conscious of doing is like understanding people's individual goals. So usually the financial advice you get in the market from the various literature out there is, you know, assumes everyone's sort of doing the same thing, which isn't always true. So what we were really cautious of is making sure the tips that we do give really suit what it is you're doing. A good example of this is, you know, let's say you're in the market to get a mortgage, or you want to buy a home or save for a deposit. Generally, when you go to a mortgage broker, they're going to look at how much you're already borrowing, how indebted you are, how under or overutilized you might be. And knowing like the way you should restructure things or repay things is in a way to like reduce, for this example, like reduce that utilization. So a lot of people are not aware is that as soon as you go over like 75% utilization, that essentially becomes a negative marker on your credit score. So if there's a way to like keep that well below, that generally will create a healthier credit profile for you. And then in doing so, when you go and seek another product, you're probably more likely to get it versus not getting it. So that's a really simple example of one of those type of alerts that we're delivering. And there's so many more that we can deliver based on where you are in your financial journey.
Mm-hmm. I'd be curious about the, as we talked about before, kind of like the human stories that you're seeing so far. So yeah, like, have you changed people's lives with Incredible and like sort of helped them, you know, improve their credit, help them fix their financial outlook because they're just more informed about their, you know, their credit and how they're using their money? Just be curious if you have any great examples there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we focus on is this notion of loss. So when you go into the app and you connect your credit cards, we'll show you of the payments you're making every month, what of that is actually going to paying down the balance, and what of that is actually paying, it's just going to interest. Because a lot of people are paying each month and they're not seeing that balance come down. So we really wanted to visualize like that information so people are aware what kind of changes they need to make. We have actually had some really, really interesting initial case studies. We have one customer who saved over £750. We've had another customer who, because of using us, they've gone in to do a balance transfer to go on a 0% credit card. We've had another customer who's, you know, restructured some of the existing products they had. And I think they remortgaged essentially to reduce that because they were seeing how much money they'd be losing by the time that they pay off. So it's really pushed people into like understanding, oh my God, I didn't realize it was costing me this much to pay off all of these loans that I have or credit cards that I have. I need to do something about it. And in doing so, it's freeing up money that they otherwise wouldn't have and would be going into interest fees. So we're seeing some really good early customer stories. And we're really excited about the ones that are to come.
Let's talk about AI. You didn't think you were getting off scot-free talking on a podcast, a tech podcast, without talking about AI. Not going to happen.
How dare we? Yeah. How dare we not talk about AI in a podcast?
Yeah. Two tech bros talking about AI. Here we go. So, you know, what we're seeing from AI is that it's like increasingly used for calculating credit risk. And at the same time, some of these systems have been called out for disproportionately flagging low income and folks of color, you know, who are borrowers as being, you know, higher risk. And subsequently, those folks incur, you know, higher interest rates. And so curious to understand, like, what you think can be done when working with data that is just flawed, you know, the data that's going into these models. And there's lots of historical reasons, you know, for that. You know, how can we even begin to think about eliminating these inaccuracies and biases that are kind of, unfortunately, embedded in our financial institutions that are now being leveraged in this way?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the changes we're actually already starting to see. And it's under the notion of like cash flow underwriting, right? So when you look historically how a loan is issued or assessed, it's on the basis of your credit profile, where you live. I mean, I think they've changed that now, but you know, all of that information that comes, that may come with biases, you know, when you're modeling out like who is more likely to repay you or not. And going back, you know, decades now, there was so many examples of ethnic minorities not being able to take out a mortgage or not being able to get out a loan simply for the color of their skin or where they live. And thankfully, loads of that has changed now. But, you know, using credit report data solely, those biases still, to some degree, still exist. So this notion to move to cash flow underwriting made possible by like open banking connectivity means you're essentially looking at on the basis of, you know, what is the income? What are the outgoings? Can they afford a loan? Yes or no? And in doing so, you do tend to remove the biases that exist. So we're seeing some really exciting changes, and there's some lenders in the market that are solely using open banking alone to underwrite the risk. But there's still a lot more improvement we can make there. But yeah, like more needs to be done. And these AI systems that do come with biases, not always intentionally, but based on the training data that's been used. You know, we do see some marginalized communities are not able to get those products that they need.
I want to talk a little bit about your funding journey and your growth journey. We'd be, again, remiss if we didn't ask about that. We're a growth strategy agency. We've helped a lot of fintechs, you know, move from Sunicorn to Unicorn. You know, we really enjoy that work. Just by way of background, so folks can kind of understand, you all raised $1 million in pre-seed. Congratulations in 2023. You had some big names in that round. So Plaid executive Keith Gross. And active angel investor Mark Ransford. Well done. Well done. You found it incredible in 2022. When you did that, did you, you know, have any notion like, oh, we're going to have these big names on our investor list. We're going to raise X amount. And would love to hear about like your forward looking growth journey, moving beyond these milestones as well.
Yeah. I think the plan, we already knew from the day we started that we would need to raise financing. Like I didn't have the network then that I have now, and it was through a lot of grind and hustle that we've gone to and been thankful and fortunate to meet such a great network in the community. Like the fintech community is quite tight knit, and people generally on the same journey are very happy to make introductions to you for you. So we're super fortunate in meeting some of the investors we have, and we've been so lucky with the help that they've given. It's not just a check for a lot of these investors; they generally take their time. And open up their network and essentially like it feels like you're building the company with them. So I've been quite lucky with the investors we've had so far. Like it was always the plan, but I didn't know how it was going to pan out. It just like we sort of just kept going until we got it done. It certainly took longer than expected, but you know, we got there in the end.
And just to dig into that a little bit more, I would love to hear a bit more about like where are you headed? Like what, you know, what does the next round look like? What growth strategies are you employing to kind of bring in, you know, new users? And yeah, just what are you doing to kind of achieve your growth goals at the moment?
Yeah. So a lot of what we've done is really go direct to the customer, to date, to really understand like what the messaging is, how are people resonating with our product. Naturally, in any sort of taboo subject, you have to figure out like what's the language market fit essentially. And when you look at traditionally, like when you look of the traditional solutions in borrowing or credit or debt or whatever you want to call it, a lot of the language used is very like, it's a bit too tiptoey, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, you're basically, yes, it's a sensitive subject, just like death or sex or whatever it might be. But when you start like tiptoeing around the actual problem, what you're doing is you're sort of making it, you're sort of furthering that notion that it's a taboo. We're really just trying to normalize. This is a very normal human thing. Borrowing money is very normal. You know, you do it at various sources of your life, regard like various times of your life, regardless of you know, what income you make or your background. So I think what we're really trying to focus on here and from the initial feedback is just moving away that this is a taboo, but completely ignoring that reality and actually just using very plain and simple language to resonate with our customer base.
And can I ask about that real quick? Like how's that going? Like it seems like there's a hill to climb in terms of, you know, customer education and sort of like taking them on an emotional journey to some extent to like, you know, almost feel comfortable and trust. Trust is such a huge word in fintech and, you know, financial institutions, like trust your product. You know, what are you doing to kind of win that trust and to take them on that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually spent a lot of time in the earlier days when we were like pre-product, like building a community. We were super fortunate. We had a really active Instagram. We reached out to people who were already sharing, you know, their willingness to want to like automate the stress away. So we did find like our initial tribe pretty quickly. And then through that, we've been fortunate enough to like learn their language, learn how, you know, they would talk about us to their friends and to their peers. And, you know, we sort of just leverage that and double down to figure out what is the, you know, what is the language? Are they willing to share this? Why would they share this? And who is that ideal, like, you know, in the industry, call it the ICP, but who is that ideal customer for you in that stage? So, you know, many people talk about finding your true 100, like your 100 true fans rather than just going far and wide. And we did that really, really early. And then we sort of just leveraged that to keep building out to the user base we have now. Our next sort of shift is definitely going to be through, you know, continue doing what we're doing already, which is going to where those customers already are, but equally leveraging partnerships. So we have some really exciting partnerships in the new year planned where we're going to be able to leverage other people in the financial services industry to really get that customer that we're looking for. And in doing so, that will also, we'll start thinking about a fundraiser.
That's always interesting to us. Like, you know, what, like, as you said, you don't have the network that you have now. So like, how did you build that? What were kind of the important steps along the way, whether it's people, you know, learnings, classes, you know, networks, just curious to hear about that journey a bit more.
Most of, you know, your listeners who are also building companies will know, like being a founder is quite a lonely journey. Even if you have a team around you, it's quite like insular almost. So we were quite fortunate actually to be, we applied to be on the Balderton incubator, which essentially is they open up their office space to us and they provide some mentorship and did some sessions with some of their portfolio companies. And in doing so, we met, you know, a number of other similar companies in a similar space, similar journey. And you could share like the day to day grind that you're going through that is usually hidden from the glorified LinkedIn posts that we see every day. So really being able to share like the raw detail of these are the problems I'm having. Naturally, you're always going to hear from someone else who's gone through similar at whatever stage in their career. Equally, they're, you know, having met like-minded people, they're willing to share their network with you. And through doing so, you know, it allowed us to, one, help others, but equally, we were also able to get a bunch of guidance, you know, based on that stage we were at. And, you know, since then, we've been part of loads of communities. There's a fintech founder community that I'm part on that everyone is very open and willing to share advice on how to think about certain problems that you might be having. And yeah, like I think if you're building a company, like try and join a community really early because that will pay dividends in the years to come.
Yeah, I can really relate to that as like we're 4 years into the journey with Literal Humans and we started in the middle of the pandemic. And yeah, I don't know how some people do it, you know, like I had a co-founder at the time, but also I've been so blessed with so many like mentors and like sort of fellowship programs. I'm doing this program at Oxford now. You know, we did like launch EOS, you know, kind of an operating system, like so many different kind of containers for my learning and growth as a founder. And yeah, I don't know how people do it without that kind of stuff. So appreciate the journey you've been on there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's jump into the lightning round. These are just like kind of quick fire questions. Try to answer with like a few words, just what comes to mind immediately. So folks can kind of get a flavor for your personality and who you are. First question, if you could start another tech startup, knowing what you know now, what would it be and why?
There's so many. Every day that I come through the various problems, I note down like this should be a company and someone should solve this.
That's why we asked this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely think there is so much room to like take away all of the operational admin that comes with starting a business. Like generally people don't start a business or a startup to do operational admin. And I know there's some interesting like companies taking various silos of that problem and automating payments or invoices or whatever it might be. But generally, this notion of a completely automated back end of a company, I do envision that can entirely be automated, especially given the size of where you are with your business. And, you know, what might work for 1 to 10 is going to be obviously very different from 10 to 50 and 50 to 100, et cetera, et cetera. but I can already see how that could work from the day you decide to start your company, from incorporation all the way through to raising your first funding round, and all that comes with hiring people, paying people, managing supply, like all of that whole process that generally is always time bound and the most stressful when you're trying to, you know, build a product from scratch and you're in the zero to one phase. It's just, it's so laborious. I think, you know, especially in where we are with generative AI and LLMs, we definitely can build a solution that automates that entire stack. So that's something that I would be excited to either see or build at some point in my time.
Yeah, I really relate to that. Like, I'm so many times on this like sort of agency building journey, I've said to myself, like, man, like it's insane how many people are reinventing the wheel constantly with like building all these different systems and structures within their business, learning things about how to run the business for the very first time, even though there's literally thousands of people out there doing the exact same thing or have done that. And it's astounding. Like, I wouldn't wish this stuff on my worst enemy. So it's like, yeah. Like, how haven't we figured out a way to like put all this stuff, like a business in a box, an agency in a box, like, and just like, okay, yeah, here, take this, do this. Like, thousands of people have done this before you. You know, it's just, it's kind of shameful what we put people through in that sense. Yeah.
Self-inflicted.
Yeah. It's wild. All right. Next question. What tech invention makes you most excited?
I mean, it's going to be a cliche given what we've spoken about and what every single other person is saying on similar podcasts, but it's definitely AI. I think there is obviously a lot of chatter that it's hype and it's like crypto and et cetera, et cetera. But actually, when you look at the utility and what you can build with it and the accuracy of some of these things, and it's still really early, like we're still in such infant, like early times. But it's definitely what is going to be capable in a year, 5 years time. I think I don't think anyone's sort of ready for it, but equally, I don't think we can even imagine what that's going to look like in 5 years time. One could also say, well, that's quite scary, which maybe we can discuss in a follow-up question.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So yeah, what's next question? What's the one that makes you the most scared?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I wouldn't actually say I'm scared of any technology. And the reason I say that is because like, I still see technology as a tool, right? And it's someone uses that tool to do good or bad. So if we, you know, if we assume that people are good, hopefully we will not see any bad applications of AI. Naturally, there's always going to be bad actors that are like in it personal gain or whatever it might be. But generally speaking, I wouldn't say I'm scared of any technology actually. Though I did see a display of autonomous drones and that looked pretty scary.
Yeah, it's always the war stuff for me. Like when you actually read these articles about what's happening, you're like, man, like, and even if it's in the hands of humans, you're like, this is scary, let alone if we make it autonomous. So yeah, gosh. Well, on a lighter note, who's a literal human who's been integral to your career journey?
It's actually my brother. I owe a lot of like my career journey to him. Like I remember him, I think I was like 4 at the time, I was peering over his shoulder and he was doing the, you know, Hello World thing, teaching himself HTML, and we grew up as gamers. You know, I grew up sort of jailbreaking my own PSP and really understanding like what technology was capable of doing. And I owe it all to him actually. So even down to my interest in why I went into technology was actually because of him. So he's definitely someone who's been an integral part of my career.
Well, Yassine, where can folks find out more about the great work that you're doing at Incredible? Where can they find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, so I'm relatively active on LinkedIn. Probably I should probably be a bit more active. And embrace the cringe, but like the website is www.getincredible.com, and we're regularly sharing a lot of content on our blog, on our LinkedIn page, and that's probably the best place to find out more.
Yeah. Well, Yassine Rostam, founder and CEO of Incredible, fantastic fintech that's helping people figure out their financial journeys and improve their credit. It's been great to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate you.
Cool. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
You bet. And as always, listeners, please check out Tech Can't Save Us. We're on every podcast platform, Apple, Spotify. Please give us a rating, give us a review so we can keep bringing on great guests like Yassine Rostam here. And thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Bye, everybody.